Good evening. Welcome to tonight's council, Bethlehem City Council. Tonight's meeting, pardon me, for Tuesday, March 3rd at 7:13 p.m. here in Town Hall. We'd all rise for the invocation by Reverend Tony Pompa of Cathedral Church of the Nativity, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Almighty God, Creator of the universe, send down upon us this night, and particularly on those who hold office in this city, and upon all those who will speak before this council this night, the spirit of wisdom, charity, and justice, that with steadfast purpose they may faithfully serve and promote the well-being of all people. In your name we pray. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Reverend. Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Colon.
Present.
Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. McGraw.
Presente.
Mr. Reynolds.
Present.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Mr. Waldman.
Present. Prior to our meeting this evening, we have two citations honoring retired employees of the city, Robert Urban and Ronald Brzezinski. They are not with us this evening, and they will be mailed their citations. Also, prior to our public hearing tonight, I'd like to announce that one of the two proposed zoning text amendments that was originally a subject of tonight's public hearing has been delayed and will not be discussed this evening. The proposed zoning text amendment amending zoning ordinance section 1302.12 concerning the definition of a bed and breakfast home was revised by the City Planning Commission at their February meeting and will need to be re-advertised and discussed at a future public hearing. The public hearing tonight will only concern proposed zoning text amendments related to the short-term lodging and hotels. Our public hearing will be focused on, again, accepting public comment on the proposed zoning ordinance amendments pertaining to short-term lodging and hotels only. In connection with the public hearing, the following communications will be read. Communication 6A.
A memorandum from Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, reporting that the City Planning Commission voted at their January 9th, 2020 meeting to recommend approval of the proposed zoning text amendment related to hotels and short-term lodging.
Communication 6B.
A letter from Samantha Smith, Chief Community Planner, Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, stating that the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission's Comprehensive Planning Committee considered the proposed zoning ordinance text amendment at its meeting on January 28, 2020, and found that the draft amendment concerning hotels and short-term lodging was generally consistent with the county comprehensive plan, and that the proposed zoning text amendment poses no substantial impact to the region.
Thank you. The public hearing will be conducted as follows. I will recognize a representative of the administration to make a presentation on the City Planning Commission's recommendations related to the administration's proposed zoning text amendment. Members of council will have the opportunity to make comments and ask questions, and the public will be recognized for comments. The public hearing is called to order. The clerk just read communication 6A and 6B. We will now recognize Darlene Heller, Planning and Zoning Director, to discuss the City's Planning Commission's recommendations related to the administration's proposed zoning text amendment bill.
Thank you. Back in December of 2017, you did pass a housing ordinance related to short-term lodging, Ordinance 1741. Since that time, a couple of things have happened. The ordinance was appealed to court. We were not very successful in that. It's still some of the appeals are still lingering. And at the same time, there was a zoning appeal, the PA Supreme Court Slice of Life zoning appeal, determined, it was a Hamilton Township case that determined that their ordinance did not permit a purely transient use of a house. That was the first Commonwealth Court case that did support a zoning ordinance on a similar appeal like that. So We felt that at that point we could create a provision, a new land use category in the zoning ordinance to support short-term lodging. Back in December, the Planning Commission had their first review. They did make some modifications. In January, they voted to recommend approval to the City Council for adoption. You saw the letter also from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. And I'd like to just go over some of those amendments with you now. It includes first the definition of hotel. We had refined the definition of a hotel back when we adopted short-term lodging in 2017. At that point, we reduced the number of rooms required for a hotel from 7 down to 1, so that anyone renting more than one bedroom to a transient visitor would automatically be considered a hotel. We added language this time to tighten that up. Specifically, we added language that a hotel is any building within which one or more rental units are rented to transient visitors to the area, but does not qualify as short-term lodging or bed and breakfast home within the meaning of the zoning ordinance. It does not include any building in the group which qualifies as short-term lodging facility or bed and breakfast home within the meaning of the zoning ordinance, and we've reiterated that a couple of times. We add a new definition in zoning for short-term lodging. To be clear, it specifies it must be an owner-occupied, single-family dwelling. Not more than 30 consecutive nights can be occupied by the transient visitor. And again, compensation is directly to the owner. As a follow-up from the Planning Commission meeting in December, we added additional language. Temporary rental to one or more transient visitors of a single-family dwelling unit or portion thereof at a time when the owner-occupant is not physically residing overnight in the structure and which temporary rental does not otherwise qualify as a bed and breakfast home use shall be considered a hotel within the meaning of the zoning ordinance. There was some concern generally that the ordinance would not be clear that for short-term lodging it would need to be an owner-occupied unit. So we tried to specify that within the definitions, both of hotel and short-term lodging facility, and we try to reiterate that throughout some of these amendments. We also add a definition for transient visitor. Within the land use category, we allow short-term lodging the same way we allow bed and breakfasts. So in the residential zoning districts, we allow short-term lodging by special exception. In the RR and the RS zoning districts, those are the lowest density residential zoning districts. We allow short-term lodging by right in RG and RT, which are of a greater density and have a greater mix of uses. A special exception use is still a permitted use, but it's not permitted administratively by our office. It's permitted through an appeal to the Zoning Hearing Board. In the non-residential zoning districts, we chose to allow short-term lodging facilities as a by right permitted use. In CL, which is limited commercial, those districts would be on East or West Broad, East 4th Street, Linden Street. Those would be typical CL districts. CB, which are the two downtown districts, North Side and South Side. IRR, which is the residential area of the Bethlehem Steel site, and OMU, which is Martin Tower. In the fourth section of the ordinance, we address parking. Any single-family dwelling is required to have two off-street parking spaces, so those spaces are required. If you're renting out one room as a short-term lodging, we do not require an additional space. If you're renting two rooms through short-term lodging, we would require a third parking space on the lot. In Section 5, we address the specific requirements for short-term lodging. Again, in the first bullet, it's only permitted in an owner-occupied single-family dwelling, existing and occupied by people as of January 1, 2020. We did add a provision. If the lot exceeds 1 acre, that you could also use an outbuilding for short-term lodging. We're trying to draft this in a way that minimizes impacts to neighboring properties. So if someone has an acre, it's in a very low density area, so if there is an outbuilding that's been adaptively reused for residential use, that would be permitted to be used for short-term lodging the way this is drafted now. The second bullet says that no more than two rooms on the lot can be offered for rent. The third is that no exterior alterations or expansions can take place to accommodate additional rooms for short-term lodging. Number four is that the short-term lodging facility must meet all requirements for health, fire, building safety. Number five, we clarify that short-term lodging could be used for no other purpose. You could not use short-term lodging as reception space, for a meeting room, for any other use other than residential short-term lodging. Item number six is we have some performance parameters in here. May not generate noise, vibration, glare, odor, or other effects. And number seven is that the short-term lodging facility must comply with all of the other provisions of 1741, which is the housing ordinance that also addresses short-term lodging. So in the future, anyone running a short-term lodging facility would still be required to get a license annually and have the facility inspected annually. That will not change. We did look at some revisions to 1741 at the committee meeting, the CD committee meeting. We would have some modifications to that ordinance just so that the definitions and other things would be compatible from one ordinance to the other. I just want to take a minute to talk about some of the enforcement that we've had with the short-term lodging facilities. We have been working with the Law Bureau, the representative, if you have specific questions, but to move forward with some of that, we are holding off on some enforcement until the ordinances are adopted. There's a new short-term lodging facility that we know of that is not owner-occupied, and we have sent enforcement notice to the property owner. It was appealed. It would be scheduled for hearing at the March Zoning Hearing Board meeting. So we are moving ahead with enforcement for new short-term lodging facilities as we become aware of them. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Heller. How did these most recent changes come about?
Really, for the purposes of enforcement, we felt it wise to have provisions included, land use provisions included in the zoning ordinance. What remains in the housing code are really more the housing provisions, the inspection provisions. They're compatible, but they serve two different purposes. So we drafted provisions to zoning that would really specifically be tied to land use. The definitions, where would they be permitted or not permitted, parking, those are specific zoning ordinance provisions.
And so all of these changes were generated in-house?
Yes.
Understood. A couple things you touched on that I want to just have a little clarification about that I'm sure will be points of contention is owner-occupied. I guess that can mean different things to different people. If, for instance, your primary residence is a house that you can leave temporarily and essentially turn it into a hotel for a weekend, that's different than what you're defined here. Is that correct?
Well, we're requiring in the language here that the owner would be occupying the structure when it is rented out.
As opposed to it being the primary residence where they live full time, but maybe are out of town or staying with somebody else?
We have a provision like that in 1741 now, and the amendments to 1741 and this amendment take the ability to do that out. If someone goes on vacation during Music Fest and they want to rent out their house, we're not allowing that within the definition of short-term lodging.
And that is a change to what we currently have?
Yes.
So currently, we would allow that?
Under the current version of 1741, yes.
Right. And another point you brought up was compensation directly to owner. Was your verbiage, what do you mean by that?
It's part of the definition of short-term lodging facility, that the agreement and the compensation would be directly with the owner, that there would be no third party involved in that. You're working, if someone is renting the short-term lodging facility, they deal directly with the owner.
Because I know of an instance where there is an owner-occupied home that rents out one room in their home, but I believe that it's done through a third party, through, I think, Airbnb, for instance.
Well, I think most of these are Airbnb.
Right. I mean, so it seems like they would fall into and be not in violation other than that new point.
I think it's really more to address that it would not be an LLC or some other agency that you would be renting from. It would be the property owner, specifically.
So if you're renting from the property owner through Airbnb, would that be allowed?
That would be allowed.
Okay. Because that seems a bit unclear to me, if the compensation is directly to the owner, because the renter pays Airbnb, Airbnb pays the homeowner, so that compensation is not direct, from my perspective.
It's not, but you are booking through the owner, mm-hmm. Through that site, just not handing them a check or cash, but you are booking through the property owner.
Is that a point that the legal department has considered?
The legal bureau has worked with us on this draft, in all sections of this draft. We've been through this draft many, many times.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if they are comfortable with that and they feel that that would hold up under scrutiny, because I guess the point here is, how do you define the word directly? You know, if I give Mr. Donches money and he gives it to Mr. Evans, I didn't give Mr. Evans money directly.
I think in our conversations about the ordinance, the concern that we had heard was really about owner occupancy in general and how do we define that.
Sure.
We don't define it specifically.
You don't define owner occupied?
Not in the ordinance, no.
Okay. Because somebody might say that this is my house and I occupy it, but if I leave for the weekend or a day, am I still occupying it?
The way this is drafted, the owner needs to be, I don't think you need to stay at home for 24 hours when someone is there, but yes, you do need to be at home. You need to be residing in the property when you rent out to a transient visitor, yes.
I know of a home in the city in which someone owns the house and they rent it out through Airbnb and then they stay somewhere else. It's their primary residence and they live there, but they rent it out frequently enough that I wonder how that would be viewed.
The language that we added that we thought addressed this question, the temporary rental to one, and this is part of the definition of a short-term lodging facility. The temporary rental of one or more transient visitors of a single-family dwelling unit or portion thereof at a time when the owner-occupant is not physically residing overnight in the structure and which temporary residential rental does not otherwise qualify as a bed-and-breakfast home use shall be considered a hotel within the meaning of the zoning ordinance.
So that
staying
that,
there overnight.
Yeah, that physically residing overnight is the point. Mm-hmm. Understood. All right. Thank you, Ms. Heller. That's all I have. Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Mr. President. I had the same hang-up, I think, on the verbiage of the owner-occupied. So I'm going to be very clear. I am not in favor of someone buying a property and not ever living there and just putting it on Airbnb. But I think in today's day and age, especially with Uber and Airbnb, things have changed a little bit. And I do not have a problem with someone who lives in a residence year-round and they go on a trip to Europe and they decide, you know, for 2 weeks we're going to be gone and we would prefer to you know, generate some income on our property, which is, to me, that's an Airbnb. So under the changes of this that we're making, that would not be allowed, correct?
Correct.
All right. So the individual who has, who is buying a home and never lives there, can he rent that out on Airbnb for 30 days?
No, the unit must be owner occupied. Right. The property must be owner occupied.
I think what I would prefer, I don't know what the rest of the council feels on this, but as of right now, without changing this, if we vote against this tonight, is someone who does not live in a property at all still allowed to rent out his unit on Airbnb?
We don't believe that's the way our ordinances are written now, but we have had difficulty in defending that. And so this tightens up the ordinance to be much more clear that we would require short-term lodging be owner-occupied.
My preference is that we find language or put in language where someone who does not live at the house at all is not permitted to rent that out on a regular basis as an Airbnb.
Well, what this does is define that as a hotel. If you're renting it out and it's not owner-occupied, it's a hotel. A hotel is only permitted in commercial zoning districts, in some commercial zoning districts. It's not permitted in a residential zone. So therefore, it would be a violation of the zoning ordinance.
But, and that's where I wanted to add, that I would prefer that we also have the language in there that if someone is living in a home year-round and they're away for, you know, 7 days or 14 days, that they are still permitted to rent it out through Airbnb. That, you know, to me, that's not an Airbnb. I've used them. You know, I went up to Penn State and I rented out a home for, you know, a weekend. And I think if we have the right terminology put in here, you know, it'll be a workable solution for everybody. I just think I'm aware of the situation with, you know, the one individual who's buying property is not living there. I'm totally against that. But I do think an owner has a right if he's away for a week, you know. And again, I think we need to put in some numbers in there on a maximum amount of days that they're allowed to do that. I don't want someone saying, well, I'm here this week, and next week I'm renting, and every other week they're doing it. I would prefer that we have, you know, maybe a number of days in there that we could add where someone who is, it's an owner-occupied, they live there, and maybe three times a year, or I don't know what the number would be, for a period of 7 days maximum, that they'd be allowed to rent that out. I think it's fair to say that, you know, some people, not all people, but some people go on vacations two or three times a year, and if they're gone, I think they should be allowed to use the Airbnb services. So that would be my preference. Thank you.
I would just add, if you don't mind, there were some property owners that did register under Ordinance 1741 for short-term lodging. None of them were signing up for the type of short-term lodging where they would rent out while they were in vacation. Nobody signed up for that. Only the owner-occupied ones signed up. Part of the challenge that we have is with enforcement. It's really hard to know and to enforce. If someone signs up that I'm going to rent out for 2 weeks or 3 weeks while I'm away, it is very hard for us to keep track of something like that. So that was the kind of thing that we were trying to look at as we address this also. How are we going to enforce? So it's just another thing to consider.
Would there possibly be a way that we put in the ordinance that if someone does want to rent it out for 7 days in Airbnb, that they have to somehow notify the city, hey, I'm using you know, seven of my days here. I'm going away at this point. I mean, I don't want it to be burdensome on, you know, on the workers in the city, but maybe there's a way that through a notification. I'm sure that the neighbors, I mean, we all heard from the neighbors of some of the units that are not owner-occupied right now, and they're pretty aware of who's coming in and out of there. So obviously, if in that situation, that unit is up on that site year-round, which I don't want. I want to prevent that. So, you know, I'm just thinking maybe some way that there's a way that if, let's say, hypothetically, you know, that we put in for 21 days, not more than, you know, 21 days a year, there's some way that that owner could notify the city that I'm using 7 or 14 or 21 of my days, so that I'm permitted while I'm on vacation. I don't know.
I would say, too, just as a reminder, I don't remember the date of that, but you did pass a pending ordinance resolution. I think it was back in January, so that this ordinance would be applicable back when we started to advertise this. And this happens with every zoning amendment that we look at as a community, but if you make changes to this ordinance, we will have to start that calendar all over again. We'll have to do the pending ordinance and go back to the Planning Commission and LVPC and start that over again. So if there's a way to move this forward the way that it's drafted, we'll have an ordinance in place. If you want to modify it, we can do that, but maybe we're able to do that as a follow-up or something like that. I'm just so you have an awareness of the timeline and the time period that it takes for the ordinances to be approved.
Just to clarify, Ms. Heller, so if council, if the majority of council wanted to make an amendment to bill, whatever, we don't have a number for this right now, mm-hmm. Article 1302, that would take months, essentially, push everything down the line.
My understanding is that for the zoning, once it's advertised, if it's revised almost in any way, we need to start the clock over.
So if there were changes that council wanted to make, is there a way to do that that would not require that laborious effort?
I think that there would be two options, to make the changes and start over, or to adopt this and then follow up with another ordinance that would tweak it or amend it.
What is the difference? If we're making an amendment after we pass an ordinance that we don't like, that has to go back through the Planning Commission process anyway, the amendment does, correct?
I'm just saying, then, if you're okay with, I guess, the bones of it, and you adopt it but want to tweak it, at least something is in place.
I don't know. This is our first discussion on this,
right,
as a council. I know it went to committee discussion, but I just wanted to make sure everybody was on the same page in the room this evening. Is there anything else, Mr. Collin?
No.
Mrs. Cramsey-Smith?
Going back to Councilman Waldron's question, if we adopted it now and wanted to amend it, how long would the amendment process take? Would it be the same as writing a new ordinance, or would it be a shorter time frame?
Well, we wouldn't be starting from scratch. I think that hopefully, you know, you would give us direction on whatever revisions you want, and we would incorporate those into an amendment. It would have to go back to the Planning Commission and the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, so there's some time there. It would need to be advertised. We would have another public hearing, and then there's two readings.
But it sounds like what you're saying is it could take less time than going through a whole new ordinance.
It's correct? Certainly less time than creating a new ordinance.
Okay.
Yes.
I am for most of the ordinance, but I do have similar concerns, because I feel that even in the Planning Commission letter, it says that they encourage the city to consider the economic impact, and this is a tourist city, and the quality of life for the residents is number one for me. But again, in reality, in this day of age, I know many family and friends who have used Airbnbs throughout the whole world, and it has worked well. And again, it's a shame that we have a few bad apples that are upsetting the cart, that we have to do this legislation. I think I would feel more comfortable looking at one at some point, either amending it to say it, maybe if you're 80% owned, you know, 80% of the time, 90% of the time, you're living in your home, but maybe it is a weekend where you're going away, and you know, someone wants to come into the city of Bethlehem, you know, as a tourist, I think. Because again, we don't want, we have to think also about the tourism in the city. I've known many people, for example, my aunt had a house in Cape Cod and had 10 kids, and when her son got married in upstate New York, she swapped houses, and it was beautiful, because otherwise she would have been paying a lot of money to put 10 kids and their spouses and boyfriends, girlfriends in the hotel. So I think of those kind of instances, and I think with this we're sort of precluding those kind of things from happening, and that concerns me.
We try to strike a balance to protect the neighborhoods so that they still can be neighborhoods while still allowing people to have Airbnb in their homes if they want to. I think some people do it because it allows them to be able to afford to stay in their homes. I think there's a lot of different reasons why people do Airbnb. But we wanted to find a way to balance it so that they're able to host people while still we can protect the neighborhoods. So there is a balance in there. Maybe we're still fishing for where that balance is, but we thought we were pretty close to that with the amendment that we have here.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, we do have to balance it, and I think the quality of life for residents is always number one for me. But I think also we have to think about if there are people with good intentions that maybe do live in their home 80-90% of the time, and maybe just once a year they go away on a weekend or something, we're precluding them, I think, you know, and that's something we need to think about. So, thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, just one comment, one question, then a comment. It's like, so if somebody does do that and they go away, or even if that was legal, they would still need to go through some type of, would they need to go through some type of permitting or whatever to any inspections or anything like that to be able to say someone's going to pay me to stay in my house or my condo or whatever it might be?
Well, the way that it's written now, this ordinance is a partner ordinance with the housing ordinance, and it does require that you get licensed annually and have an annual inspection.
Yeah, so if somebody was going to do that for a couple of weeks or a weekend or whatever, they would have to go through the whole process of licensing their house or their condo anyway, correct?
Correct.
And I think it just leads to one, and this is just a general comment, is that this strike, whatever we write here, is going to balance out, obviously, the issues that have come up in this room before in these neighborhoods with private property rights. And the two things that are going to come into play there are going to be how judges necessarily look at this, because you can write the strongest law that everybody in this room necessarily agrees with, and you easily could get a judge that says, like, I don't care what it says this person violated, that I think that person's allowed to do what they want with their property. So I think that's a reality. And the other thing that's going to be difficult is enforcement. It's a lot easier to enforce one person that's doing this on a large scale with 6, 7, 8, 9 properties. That's going to be something that, you know, it's easy to see that one person can't be living in 9 houses that they own on the same street or whatever. But at the same time, if somebody is going to do it here or there, or proving that it's owner-occupied, we can pass it. I'm not saying that I'm not going to vote for it, because I am. I'm saying the enforcement is going to be very, very difficult to prove that people aren't staying in their house, to be able to get city staff, it's like everything else. It's like, do people put their garbage out on the right day? I mean, it's going to be a difficult thing to enforce. And as we talk about the different language here, I just think it's something we need to think, is that we're passing something with our intentions. But whatever we pass, the easier it is to enforce and the easier it is to prove, the more likely it is that a judge is not going to be able to look at that and throw it out because of ambiguity, or say, how are you proving that this is owner-occupied or whatever. Whatever we put in our law, it should be able to be easily enforced and easily proven if we want it to stand up in front of a judge, which we do. Thank you, Mr. Waldron.
I do have some concerns that the same that Mr. Callahan and Ms. Crimsey Smith brought up. And I would say, you know, finding the balance is key here, because we want to protect our neighborhoods. Similarly, we want to not put a sign up that say no guests allowed in the city of Bethlehem. To force everyone into a hotel may not be a solution that works for all visitors and all families. As someone with I've lost count how many kids, but a lot of young kids, us going into a hotel is a non-starter. If we try to travel somewhere and said our only option is a hotel, we just don't go there. We go somewhere where we can have an Airbnb, where we can have a whole house. And as guests of Airbnb, I like to think that we're responsible users, that we treat the neighbors in that community respectfully, and we spend our dollars in that community. And to not allow visitors to come to our city and tourists, we're putting up a big guests are not welcome here, which I don't think is a message we want to send. I understand there's a responsible way to do it. I know of an Airbnb that is a very responsible user who is not on the grid, if you will, within the city system. But I also know that generates a lot of money to the city through those visitors who are spending a lot of dollars in the downtown that wouldn't be spent necessarily if we had this ordinance in place. So I think the balance is key, and I'm not sure that this ordinance finds that balance. And I understand the intentions are very, very good and pure. And again, to point to what Mr. Reynolds said, how do we find that balance that is also going to be able to be held up in court? Because we thought we had a good ordinance in place that everybody was on board with that had that balance. Turns out, you know, the judges did not think so. So, and I don't want to start the whole process over necessarily, but at the same time, I think it's our responsibility to find something that is a good fit, that finds a good balance between protecting our neighborhoods as well as welcoming responsible visitors who would like to come here and spend their dollars, and empowering Airbnb hosts to be responsible stewards of their neighborhood. Because it can be done. I know of an Airbnb that rented their house out more than 50% of the year, I would say, and there was no issues. So it can be done, and I hope that we can find the balance tonight. Well, obviously it's not going to be tonight, but it's an ongoing conversation, and this may not be the last time this ordinance comes to us as our economy changes and the culture changes within our neighborhood and within the country based on the new technologies that are popping up. Because, you know, 10 years ago, I don't think anybody thought this was going to be an issue where you were going to be renting out your house to a complete stranger that you never met or getting into a car that was somebody you didn't know. But it's become commonplace at this point. Are there any other questions or comments for administration? Thank you, Ms. Heller.
Thank you.
As we move along with our public hearing, I will now recognize the public for comment. This is an opportunity for anyone to share their opinion with council based on the public hearing that is in front of us. I'll start on the side of the room. Is there anyone who'd like to make comment on the public hearing? Anyone in the center? Yes, Ms. Diamond.
Barbara Diamond, 425 Sutter Street. As you know, I've spoken a number of times about my opposition to the whole house / apartment short-term rentals that are owned by an investor such as Operato Market and Church Streets. And I'm really happy that you're making an effort to strengthen our ordinance. And I'd like to say that I appreciate what you're saying, what your concerns are about the homeowner who might occasionally have some business overseas, or we have a lot of professors in our city that may be doing a professorship overseas. And I could see that would be a very different situation than what we have, where we have an investor or group of investors who've bought a house, removing it from the housing stock and operating it year-round for commercial reasons. So I would hope that maybe there is some language that could amend or alter what is proposed here that may be able to allow those people who want to have somebody in their house while they're away, but are not doing it on a regular basis. But what I'm worried about is because the city failed to enforce the ordinance that was passed in 2018 against those operations, the three whole house Airbnbs in the historic district, but I'm speaking for Bethlehem as well because there are others. And now I understand there's a fourth. So we have on Market Street, three whole house Airbnbs, and then one over here on Church Street that have continued to operate despite multiple complaints from neighbors having to do with noise and drunkenness, late night parties, parking problems, a whole host of issues and concerns about security. So the quality of life in neighborhoods is very much diminished by the operations of these ongoing investor-owned operations. So I'm thankful that the Supreme Court did determine that these kinds of operations are not permitted in residential neighborhoods, and I hope that passing this ordinance and possibly tinkering with it a little bit will immediately shut down those illegal hotels. But my question and concern is whether the same thing will happen again. I hope not. It sounds like the city is making an effort to tighten things, but will you look the other way? Will the ambiguity of the language in the ordinance provide a loophole for the owners of those houses on Church and Market to continue to operate? And I would just like to say that this is one of several issues that have come before you recently that have to do with neighborhoods, where people in neighborhoods across the city have come and asked you, have implored you to side with them to protect their quality of life against powerful commercial interests that want to exploit their neighborhood for financial gain. To West Market Street, Garrison Street, and the Airbnbs in our neighborhood. As Stephen Antalics mentioned some time ago, transient housing is the most unstable housing, second only to student housing in its destructive power. So please assure that this ordinance properly eliminates all whole house investor short-term rentals from residential neighborhoods and permits them only in commercial districts. And so that may be one point to make about your concerns about having a place where families can come and rent. This doesn't eliminate those opportunities. They're still there, but they're in their proper place.
Is there anyone else? Yes.
I'm Steve Diamond, 425 Center Street. First, I'd like to say thank you for your previous vote for housing ordinance, recognizing how the Airbnbs can be damaging to multiple communities. However, as I sat listening to the presentation, I'd like you to be able to define what owner means. And I'll tell you why. Barbara and I, we own multiple properties in different places, and we have it as an LLC. So I could see right away, if you say owner, the LLC is an owner, but I'm going to hire someone by giving them a little piece of the LLC as an owner, and give them a rental property in my house. So therefore, they are going to collect the money. So I'd like you to be able to define that owner is actually a person that owns the house and lives there, and not a corporation that has given a piece of a ownership to live in that house. The other question I have is, will you be using language to stop someone from being grandfathered in with this current law? That the people who have broken the law before are actually brought to task for what they have done. So I'd like to thank you very much for listening to my complaint. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond.
Hi, I'm Wendy Martel, 1335 Center Street. I have a couple concerns. First of all, it sounds like this issue is maybe perhaps two different issues. One being the commercial aspect of, as they were saying, people buying out properties. And the other of determining what is owner-occupied. I have a house, I live alone. I have a lot of bedrooms, and I let my place out occasionally. I stay on the third floor, they're on the second floor. If they have extra people, they sleep on the couch. Okay, what happens if I decide to go spend the night at my girlfriend's house? Okay, I'm not there now. And another thing, everybody talks about Airbnb, oh, it's so dangerous, it's so bad for our area. You know what? The people that I have had have been wonderful, excellent, to the point my neighbors didn't even know they were there. They went shopping, they went to the restaurants, they were alumni from Lehigh, so they were back in the area. I just think that before you pass something, the verbiage needs to be very clear. Let's not pass something and then try to fix it later. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the center who'd like to make comment?
Good evening. I'm Attorney Stevens with the law firm of Davis & McCarthy. I'm here tonight to speak on behalf of the Hotel Bethlehem, and I'm following up on an email that was sent to council of March 1, 2020, and I have handouts. I have the email as the first handout. If you just take one, pass it on. The second are the proposed revisions to the zoning amendment. And the third one are proposed revisions to the regulation, which I think there's going to be comment later tonight, but I wanted to hand up everything now, so if I can approach. With respect and following up on the email that was sent to you by Mr. Haynes, tonight, you know, we're here thanking council for their involvement with this short-term lodging ordinance and its regulation, and we're really here tonight to comment on it and to see where it can be tweaked. So, as was mentioned by Mr. Reynolds earlier, we want an ordinance that will withstand any scrutiny by a higher court if it ever is challenged. We're also supporting a ordinance that really supports the concept of home sharing, as was just described by this young lady who came up and said she's sharing her house and living there and enjoying the company. Yes, that's what we want. We want people to be home occupiers there in the house when their guests arrive. And the concerns that are outlined in the email and in our suggested revisions are to address the apartment type Airbnbs, where they're independent apartments with separate entrances, where they really are not doing that home sharing type of concept. We're asking you to consider revisions on that front. With respect to the independent whole house rentals and the concerns that was mentioned of the four properties in the historic district itself, those properties really are controlled by the slice of life condition. The legal landscape has changed at this point, where under the current Pennsylvania Supreme Court law, any type of short-term lodging that we see is prohibited by law, and I submit that the zoning ordinance in Hamilton Township that was upheld is similar to what we have in Bethlehem, and what the court seized on there was the definition of family. It said, look, under your ordinance, you define family. That's not what's going on here. This is a commercial operation. Therefore, short-term lodging is prohibited. Same thing applies currently in the city of Bethlehem. What this ordinance is doing, it's allowing, it's really, you know, creating an exception to the current state of the law and allowing short-term lodging to occur in a residential neighborhood. And that's why we ask that if that's going to occur, that it be done responsibly, and it does in fact balance the interests that has been talked about earlier as far as protecting the interests of the short-term lodger, the person who wants to legitimately bring people in and rent their house, but at the same time balance the interests of the hotels that are operating and complying with the law, the other bed and breakfast operations, other short-term operations that are complying with the law. You want to watch out for producing affordable housing in the city, and you want to watch out for the issue of destabilizing neighborhoods. If this goes on, you pass an ordinance that is not clear, and you have issues with enforcement that has been suggested as well. So turning to the actual ordinance, the suggested changes, and that's the 1302.117.1, we're suggesting that rather than the word structure be used, dwelling units, we're clear we're talking about a residential dwelling unit. Also, there was talk about subsection 1. Under short-term lodging, there's a section that provides, it's really a caveat, where if you have a one-acre property and there's some accessory structure on there, that is allowed to be used as a short-term rental operation. We submit that's essentially the operation of a hotel. It runs counter to the home-sharing, home-occupier concept, and we ask that that particular provision be stricken. The last point is subsection 8. We're asking that a section be added to this amendment that provides specific language that prohibits this apartment type concept where there's a separate entrance. What we're just simply asking is that there's a definition that if you're staying in a home, any of the entranceways where there's ingress and egress to the property, that the guests who are staying in your house are allowed to enter into those entranceways and go into the main common areas of the house. You don't have these independent apartments. I'd ask you consider these changes on behalf of the hotel. And again, we do thank your interest and your efforts in coming up with an ordinance that truly does balance all of the interests. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the center who'd like to make comment? Mr. Shire, you're on deck.
Lisa Rose, 22 Fern. You talk about Bethlehem City as a tourist city, but you also got to remember that there are residents here, and before this became a tourist city, people lived here. And residents are so important, then why is there a lack of housing? I've been traveling up and down the south side of Bethlehem since last March looking for an apartment. And the southwest is all student housing. All of it. Go up Carlton, Montclair, even up to Atlantic Street. All you see is signs, student housing. I've been looking everywhere. Go on Craigslist, all you find is student housing. Otherwise, everything is so expensive that I can't afford an apartment. Half of the owners of these properties don't live there. They just own the buildings, rent them out, or give them the realtors to rent them out for them. I mean, tourists are always welcome. It's starting to feel like residents aren't. I mean, a year, and I still haven't found an apartment. Whole year. Something has to be fixed in this city. I mean, yes, the tourists bring in the money. I understand that. But what happens to the people that really live here? We can't afford to live here. I was born and raised here. I was born at St. Luke's Hospital. Lived in South Terrace back when, before it was Linfield. Lived on 4th Street. Lived in Randallwood Lane. Lived on Mechanic Street for almost 20 years. Now I can't even live. I don't know what to do. All I know is I want to help. I want to help people in the city. And I'm trying to find a way, and I'll keep working at it, because I won't give up. But we got to work together. That's all I have to say.
Sir, you'll be next after this young man.
First, Bill Shar, 1898 Avenue. Excuse me. First, a point of clarification. I just reread the definition of short-term lodging in Enclosure 6K in tonight's packet, and the word directly does not appear next to the word compensation. It's really neither here nor there, but perhaps it clarifies things a bit. I'd like to propose two fixes to the ordinance. First, this issue of a homeowner going away for a vacation and would like to rent out their house. The issue remains, the gap remains, of supervision. Now, the owner's not there. And the basic idea of having the owner there is supervision, which they came up some time ago in these discussions. So, one possible way out of this is for the owner, in this case, to designate a resident of the neighborhood as supervisor, or perhaps even stay in the house while it's being rented out. You would have to define what is meant by the neighborhood. It would be important that it would be somebody from the same neighborhood. And you would have to define neighborhood for that purpose. But it's a thought for dealing with this question of renting out while you're on vacation, or as Barbara pointed out, maybe you're gone for a year in a sabbatical. the second fix I would propose is that there is a fundamental flaw in the ordinance as it now stands, because there is no limit on the number of such dwellings. They could theoretically take over a whole neighborhood. Everyone could be owner-occupied and renting out rooms. Is that what we want? I think not. Therefore, there should be some limit within the neighborhood. Now, here again, how do you define a neighborhood? Well, there's an easier way on this issue. I recall when I was living in D.C. that a burning issue was halfway houses. And there was concerns that certain neighborhoods would be one halfway house after another. And so the local council passed an ordinance that no halfway house could be within so many feet of another halfway house. And that would enforce a certain dispersal of halfway houses, so they wouldn't be all congregated in one neighborhood. You could do something here on these types of dwellings. the number of feet, of course, would be a bone of contention, but a simple phrase that no short-term lodging facility, if that's the right word, could be within so many feet of another one. Something to think about, as Mr. Gallagher would say. Thank you.
Sorry about that. My name is Frank Boyer. I live at 234 East Market Street. I really wasn't prepared to speak tonight, but after this woman mentioned that she's been hosting guests without problem, I just want to let you know that I live on the same block as two of the whole house Airbnbs. I live within 150 feet of the two of them. And I have had personal problems with them. Nothing that I couldn't deal with, but I want to give you three examples that came to my mind while she was speaking. First one is on multiple occasions, especially in the summertime, when you're sleeping with the windows open, you know, at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, you hear a bunch of what sounds like drunks walking up the street, making all kinds of racket. You know, maybe it's after a wedding or after rehearsal dinner or something, but clearly it was not my neighbors. I know all my neighbors. It wasn't them making all this racket. I don't know where they were sleeping that night, but I bet a lot of money that it was in those whole house Airbnbs. That's kind of a general circumstance, but it's happened to me a couple times. Another time, I had my dog. I had a 14-year-old dog. I was out in my side yard with him at 10 o'clock at night before going to bed. The dog wouldn't go 15 feet from me ever. Very well trained. People walked up the street. The one woman started yelling at me, "Get that dog on a leash! Get that dog on a leash!" The dog didn't come any closer to her than from me to Mr. Waldron. "Get that dog on a leash." Wasn't one of my neighbors. I didn't say a word. But I walked out on the sidewalk after they kept going and watched them walk into the Airbnb. Neighbors don't treat neighbors like that. Third instance, and then I sit down. I was in my house one Sunday morning, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, banging on the front door. Bang, bang, bang. Not ring the doorbell. Woman says, "You have me parked in. I can't get my car out of my spot. I need to leave town." It wasn't my car. I had parked across the street the night before because I couldn't get a space directly in front of my house. But, you know, she's bringing this problem in on me. Again, it wasn't my neighbors. My neighbors know who I am, know my car. This is what you're bringing into the neighborhood. This is what's ruining the quality of life in a nice neighborhood. It's not all rosy. It's not just all nice people that do this stuff. There are certainly some nice people, but it's not all of them. And it doesn't help the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boyer.
Yes.
My name is Kelly Ronalds, and I reside at 448 Main Street. Just a few quick points. Thank you for the consideration that you're making in this ordinance. I've resided in Bethlehem as a renter for almost 8 years, and my last house that I rented was sold by Moravian College when they bought the Moravian Bookstore. And I was told it was being converted into student housing, and so I had to find another place to live. I'm by myself, a cat lady with two cats, gotta find a place to live. Looked and looked and looked and looked. The only place I could find, and I'm very happy where I'm at, hopefully it stays residential as an apartment, but I live on Main Street. Now, a lot of Main Street is becoming Airbnb. So if we put Airbnb in the commercial district, and we have Airbnbs and illegal apartments, rentals through Airbnb taking place in the residential neighborhoods, where do people who go, who shop downtown, north side and south side, dine downtown, north side and south side, shop downtown, north side and south side, and work downtown, north side? I get rid of my car. What do I need it for? I work at the hotel. On a bad day, I have to look left twice. So finding places, I sympathize with the woman who spoke earlier. I was lucky to find a place close, but now Airbnb is, which it should be, it's commercial business. It's in the commercial district, but to continue to have it encroach into our neighborhoods makes it harder for people who want to live in the neighborhoods. I also wanted to talk about the with the Airbnbs, the when we talk about, and I know Mr. Stevens brought it up since he's the hotel's attorney, tightening the language, which I would appreciate very much if you would look at. I had a friend who stayed at an apartment that was on Airbnb on Church Street. And it was licensed, I know we're not talking about bed and breakfast tonight, but it was licensed by the city as a bed and breakfast. Airbnb started as home sharing. Come into my house, my son went away to school, come live in his bedroom and share my living space. But that's not what this was. It was an in-law apartment that had been rented under a lease, but then that gave up. And my friend stayed there, I went in it. There was no entrance to the house. You weren't allowed in the house. There was a connecting door on the second floor, but it was in the bathroom. That's not really a way to go in and out, and it was locked. So I would say that connectivity is important because it doesn't foster home sharing. And also it doesn't allow enforcement. I can unlock the door when enforcement comes and lock it back up when the guests come. So I would ask you to look at that. Also, one thing that just triggered me when I was looking at the revised ordinance is, I think it's section 5.1 where it talks about permitting on a 1-acre lot out buildings. I think that needs to, it allows a hotel, no matter even if it's low density, it allows a hotel in a residential district, no matter what the size. I mean, you could buy a couple of houses in any neighborhood, knock them down like they do in the big cities and build a bigger property and have that whole thing be an Airbnb or some sort of apartment rental. So I would ask you to please look at that language as well. I know a gentleman brought up about being owner-occupied. To me, that's a little fuzzy. You could give me 1% of your LLC and pay me that 1%, and now I'm owner-occupied. So I think, you know, looking at the language and just tagging it up, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the center? Yes, sir.
Members of the committee, dear neighbors, I also live in Bethlehem for many, many years. As a member of the Association of Realtors, I own multiple houses in the area. I rent to Airbnb and other companies, not just Airbnb. I've had nothing but great experience with them. I have 3 children living in a house. My house is a bi-level house. It has a dedicated entrance which goes around the house into the lower level of the house. I'm gonna answer the question to the hotel lobbyist. How a single entrance to the house would be different, requiring us to put additional entrance to the house when the hotel has one entrance? Are we gonna require the hotel to have multiple entrances to enter into the buildings as well? In some cases, it does, yes. To the neighbors, I understand that you are living in a dense neighborhood. It's possible to have complaints from people coming to your properties and stuff, but that's not just a short-term stay. They could be from anyone, students, other people passing by, walking through. You cannot prove that those are people coming to Airbnb staying. A short-term stay also helped us a lot in the way of those people who are coming to our area, they want to know more about the area from a homeowner. They want to talk to us. They ask how the neighborhood is. They ask where the good stuff are, where the trails are, where everything is, where the restaurants are. So sometimes we explain to them, we point out where they need to go. We bring value to this potentially home buyers or people moving to our area. Once they go to the hotel, they don't know anybody there. It's all commercialized. All they talk to the front desk, and if they're in a good mood, they'll give them a good news. If they're not, they'll tell them the bad news, what happened yesterday. So I want you to really consider this because it's affecting everyone. A small change can make a big impact on our community.
Thank you, sir. And can I have your name for the record? For the
My name is Stan Gingiff, and I live on 1332 Budstown Road.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the center who'd like to make comment? Moving on to this side of the room, Mr. Caratola.
Hi, I'm Marty Caratola, 813 Lawford Street in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I have an ideal place that would be great for people out of town to be renting, but I can't do it. The city prohibits me from doing this. For the simple fact is, I have to be at that residence all the time. I can't take off to New Orleans. I can't take off to California. I gotta be there because I'm like sitting on top of a volcano because I have a common trap of a sewer that is grandfathered in that everyone that owns property in the row of houses that I am at, which is a perfect ideal place, 7 blocks from the casino, and it's right by Lehigh University, it's right by a lot of historical things over by on the south side. I have the common trap that every single person who has the luxury of having all these houses that they rent, and they can go with an Airbnb, I can't do it, but they can do it. They have it that they can go ahead and they don't need a trap. Their 6 houses that they have in the row can go right, their sewage waste can go right through into my basement, and if it gets blocked up in my trap and doesn't go through the main, I get all the sewage problems and all the body waste into my basement that I have to clean out. And other people like me have to do the same thing. You're grandfathering this thing in that was done in back in the 20s when those houses were owned by one person. One person owned 6 houses. Now you've made it in the 30s or 40s and they could be sold to individual people. And those people don't have to go have their own trap. It's all the responsible people like me that we have to stay in the place. We can't rent our place out. We're living on top of a sewer thing that could go ahead and go up anytime, and we got to clean up the mess. I mean, is that fair for people? There's not many people like me in the city, but there are a few that have that common trap situation. Everybody needs to be responsible for their own mess. That article needs to be changed. It is not the same thing that it was back in the 20s or when it was grandfathered in. It's all different now. Everybody, different people own those properties. If you build a house, you need to have your own trap going into the sewerage system. These people don't have to. They can rely on the huckleberry on the end, like me, to go ahead and clean up their mess. When somebody puts in something that blocks up the toilet, it goes in, doesn't start, go into their basement. It doesn't do nothing to them. It goes right through. There's a trap. It doesn't go out through my trap. It blocks up into my basement. And I have to clean up the mess. Now, is that fair? Come on. I like to go with this situation too and be able to rent out my property and get out of Bethlehem every now and then and go to the casinos in New Orleans and get to Malibu and get away from my town. I can't do it. I have to stay there because I can't rely on anybody else that's going to be there to clean up this mess if it happens. That article needs to be changed. That article that I proposed a few weeks ago that I heard nothing from anybody in the city that I proposed and I sent the letters out to have this thing changed, it needs to be changed. It's not the same thing anymore. It's those properties that are connected, they don't have to have a common trap. It goes on to me. I can't leave my city, you know, because I can't go with Airbnb. I can't rent my place out because I have 2 rooms that I can rent out, but I can't rent it out. Because not only do I have to be there, a lot of times people come in, they say, it smells like a sewer in here. You know, I'm dealing with this stuff. That's not fair to not only me and people like me. And then also, I'm running out of time, we have a situation where
the parking authority puts a big cinder block blocking half of my space there, that I could easily take my fence down and have a parking space there. But no, they have that block there for over 10 years, and you let them get away with it. We're not going to be a place that people can park, even if I was able to rent my spot. If I was able to do that, they'd have a spot there that they can rent right alongside of my house. Thank you. I've had my vetting for today.
Is there anyone else on this side of the room who'd like to make a comment? Yes.
I can't get over the seats like that other man. Kate McVeigh, 1221 Lorraine Avenue. I'm an Airbnb host. I hope all of you read Mr. Pucher's article in the Morning Call on the 18th of January, stating the positive things that Airbnb bring to Bethlehem, the money it brings to the local businesses and the money it brings to the homeowners of this city. I own a 4-bedroom home. My children are grown and gone. I have lived in the house for 30 years. I like to think I'm a good neighbor. I also do many things to improve my home and garden and to make it safe and curb appealing. I take pride in my home. What Airbnb does for me is that it provides income that allows me to stay in my home. It allows me to make improvements on my home, and it allows me to pay the real estate taxes on my home. I hear and understand the complaints with regard to the entire houses being rented out to visitors. I do not do that. I rent out one room. Airbnb not only provides me with income, it has been a great experience. I have met wonderful people of all ages. Students, people who come to visit their parents in personal care homes, people who come for job interviews, people who come for the birth of a grandchild, people who come to enjoy our festivals, and craft people who come as vendors for Chris Kindlemart and other art shows. All of these people spend money in local restaurants and stores. The thing that I find most perplexing about the new ordinance is the parking requirement. 2 parking spaces to rent out one room. Many of my people come by bus and they come by plane. They don't require any parking. They Uber to my house, they walk downtown. I live right by Moravian College. I just spoke with Ms. Heller, and she said that to rent out a whole house, the city requires 1.7 parking. I don't get that, but why would I, who rent out one room, be required to have 2 parking spaces? On Greenwich Street, where they rent out whole houses, 3 and 4 bedrooms, that could be students, that's 4 cars, and they're required 1.7 parking places. We have parking issues on my street, but it's from Moravian College. It's not from any other situation. And as an aside, when I decided to do Airbnb, I spoke with my neighbors and I asked them how they felt about that. Well, I've been there a long time and they know me. And they think I'm a good neighbor, and they were fine with that. I think they'd like me to stay on Lorraine Avenue. I realize I live in a city. I realize I don't own the street in front of my house. I realize I live in a community and society where we share. I realize that I am not granted a parking space directly in front of my house, and as many people do, I do not put out broken chairs and other eyesores to reserve my space. And this isn't happening on my street with my neighbors. Not when it snows. When they know Moravian is having a big event, they haul out their garbage, whatever it is, and put it on the street. I've spoken to the parking authority. I thought that was illegal. It is not. So I guess you can put out anything you want to reserve your space. What I wish to do is stay in my home and pay my bills and contribute to my city. Airbnb allows me to do that. I am asking that you not single out Airbnb hosts for with parking requirements and certain things that other people don't have to do, like landlords who rent out entire houses. And Mr. Callahan said something about renting out, if people buying homes and renting it out, and there's no, I didn't quite understand that, but it, my time is up. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Heller, just a point. I believe you're renting out one room. The requirement is one car. Ms. Heller?
The way the ordinance is drafted, every single family home is required two spaces in the zoning ordinance. If you're renting out one room, we would not require an additional space. If you're renting out two rooms, we would require a third space, additional space. That's the way it's drafted now.
So there's no parking requirement for an Airbnb home? Is that what you're saying?
Of one bedroom, right. You're renting out one bedroom.
So there's
houses,
no
spaces are not required to create additional space.
In market news, it is illegal to put trash out in the street.
I call the parking authority.
Call the police. Is there anyone else who would like to make comment on the public hearing before we adjourn? Yes.
Even though we're out in section one, I've heard a lot of your arguments.
If you come in late, you've got to sit on this side, or
yes,
you're likely to be skipped.
I learned my lesson. Roland Yoshida, 135 East Market Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. You know, for years, I had been provost at Lehigh University. And the one thing I learned is that you cannot craft a perfect law, a perfect regulation, because people are going to get around it in some way. So, you know, trying to split hairs here, trying to figure out the perfect formula, you're not going to do it. For example, at Lehigh, we've been trying to control drinking at fraternities, and you know how lucky we've been to do that, and how many times we've tried to craft regulation, disciplinary committees, so on and so forth. So the point is that I think what's important is not to dumb down the law, because when you get to the lowest common denominator, then you're going to get a lot of low common denominator. I think what you want to do is to find a reasonable level and a reasonable standard, and then to have people in the community, Kate McVeigh being an example, who look at the community and understand what their responsibility is under the law. That's not to say that she's going to leave one night and, boy, she's broken the law. But if she's responsible, obviously this is going to happen. You can't control all that behavior. But if the behavior in that house comes to the attention of neighbors, then there's a standard by which you can say you did not meet that standard. And it's up to the individual to meet their community responsibility. I think we've gone so legalistic in this society, everyone tries to find the loopholes. But if you find a good high standard and say, follow it, and not everyone's going to follow it, they're good citizens who follow. You just mentioned there's a person who rents their property more than 51% of the time. I don't know where they file their taxes, because in order to be a person in a state, you have to be residing at least 51% in a house. So maybe they're not a resident of Pennsylvania. But that house has not come to the attention of the city for some reason, or the neighbors, because maybe that person is enforcing, self-enforcing good behavior within that house. What we're talking about, or what I would hope that you do, is to find that good standard and enforce that standard when it comes to the attention of the city, like Frank Boyer mentioned, certain behavior. And it's that I think we have to get to. I'll give you the last example, and this totally surprised me. Now think about this. I had a person who called me from Greece. He said, look, is this person on your faculty? I said, oh yeah, full professor, tenure.
Interesting. Full professor tenure at our university, too. How did that happen? We don't know. But we had a provision that every professor had to sign a document saying that they were teaching full-time, that they were not engaging in consultant activity beyond a certain point. And it was on that standard that this person eventually resigned from the university. We couldn't police every year, are you teaching at another university? It would have been impossible to do that. So all I'm asking is, don't try to split the hairs. You're never going to get to that point. But set a good, high standard by which, if the community begins to violate it and it's called to your attention, that we can enforce. Thank you.
Any other comments on the public hearing? Seeing none, the proposed zoning text bill will be placed on the March 17th agenda for first reading. The public hearing is adjourned. So folks, for all of you who are there here this evening to talk about what we just did, that'll be our last action and discussion on it this evening. If you'd like to step out, please do so quietly, as we will now start our full agenda. There are no minutes seeking approval this evening. Moving on to public comment on any subject not being voted on. You're still with us. Mr. Armstrong.
My knees are cramping up too.
Good evening. Phil Armstrong, Lehigh County Executive. As I made my promise when I ran for office, that I think it's the responsibility of the county executive to get out to every one of the 25 municipal meetings every year. Tonight's mine. I picked a lucky night to be here. I have to say that. But just sitting there listening, you know, knowing I'm also on the World Heritage Committee, and the tourism that is a major part of this city, this isn't something that I really commend you for looking at and trying to deal with it in the best way possible. But my real reason for being here tonight is I'm preaching census, but Stephanie in Bethlehem is already doing a fantastic job. But I'm trying to get the word out to everybody how important it is to be counted. And when I go to every one of the meetings this year, I'm trying to emphasize the fact anybody who's complaining about local taxes should realize by being counted in the census, they have then provided our area with $2,093 every year for 10 years by being counted. And that's the money that we're using for infrastructure, schools, libraries, social programs. So we're talking 10 years ago, Lehigh County missed 30% of its population. We don't want to do that again. So we really want to emphasize, especially to the local leaders in the community, please do your best to make sure we get the word out that we're all counted. I've also, what I really come for is to just listen, to see what's going on in every community. And I, in my 3 minutes, ask you if you have any questions of the county. Listening to your hearing earlier, by the way, you are the only city that is split in two counties. So if you would like, Lehigh County would love to have you come over. You know, we have no problem with that. So, but do you have any questions about anything on Lehigh County side of the city of Bethlehem?
I don't know. I will reach out to my colleagues, but I will say thank you for joining us this evening. We have a couple Lehigh County residents on the council, so we are your constituents.
Yes, definitely.
And
it does make a unique situation.
For sure. As you know, we keep finding out with every issue that comes before us. Are there any comments or questions, members of council, for Mr. Armstrong? No?
I do say, though, that we do work unbelievably well with the city of Bethlehem and the county of Northampton. And I guess the greatest example was this right in the beginning with the 911 center, how we moved Bethlehem into Northampton County, but we share the same equipment, so now everything can smoothly transition from county to county. So I think that's a great example of cooperation. So.
If only we could be the model for Harrisburg and Washington.
Oh, absolutely. I think it, but that's why, you know, the new campaign made possible in the Lehigh Valley. It's not made possible in Lehigh County or in Northampton County. We work together, and I think that's why we have seen the progress that we've seen in this area over the last 5 years. Very proud of that.
Well, thank you for joining us.
More than welcome. Thank you.
And don't run out yet. We still have a full agenda to get to.
I may go to the rescue.
Okay. It doesn't count as your visit unless you stay to the end.
Yeah, I'll be back.
New business can be quite fun. Moving on, Mr. Spagnuolo, are you still awake?
Council President, Anthony Spagnuolo, 10 West 4th Street. Soto Sani is the business, the restaurant. Just an observation, hopefully, if you could help me. And I love the mounted police. They come by. I was hoping we could maybe purchase or see getting, lack of a better term, dung bags. They cost about $250 a piece. I don't know how many we need, three or four. I'm used to sponsoring anything. I would love to sponsor those bags. I know people need jobs and cleaning up the dung bag. I just think it's a little defeatist. So the other problem I would see is we would need a horse trainer, whisper, because the horse isn't going to just go in it. So I have a guy, and he will do it for free. So that's one other problem. And that's really all I'd like you to consider. I just think it's a little, wherever they are in the city, a bit disgusting. And I know there's an app and you can go on it and they come right within 10-15 minutes, that's fine. But I think the bags would be applicable for this situation. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spagnuolo. We'll pass it along to the chief. I think we've gotten everyone who's signed up for first public comment, unless there's anyone else who would like to make comments starting on this side of the room on it, any subject not being voted on this evening. Is there anyone who'd like to make comment? I'll let you two arm wrestle to figure out who's going to go first. Age or beauty? Oh, it's a tie.
Beauty's first.
Don't all jump up at once.
No, he's going to
go. Okay. Thank you.
Gadfly 1 and then Gadfly 2.
Beauty 1 out.
Beauty 1 out.
I'm grinding in front of the Amherst. Stephen Antalics. 737 Ridge. / 1201 Woodstone Road. This is the general borough law of South Bethlehem ordinances, South Bethlehem ordinance, the borough, published 1891. And Article 22 says, first, all that strip of or piece of ground bounded and described as follows, beginning at the northwest corner of Lehigh University grounds, 2 degrees and 20 minutes west, 60 feet to point in the eastern line of Broadhead Avenue. And this description goes on quite a way, but the next section says that the street or highway formed by the above description or piece of land be and hereby named Packer Avenue. and that was the birth of Packer Avenue. And things went well with Packer Avenue. Some exquisite residences were there. There's a Moravian church. And houses, very ornate houses with stone wall, stone fences, ornate iron fences. And it thrived. Then in 1956, the mayor asked for a meeting for Bethlehem redevelopment, because World War II ended and a great demand for steel, Bethlehem steel thrived, and the GI Bill for the vets started to overcrowd Lehigh, which then required expansions of Lehigh and Bethlehem steel. But also in the late 50s, many of the original immigrants from Middle Eastern Europe died. The properties were bought up by non-resident landowners, but they didn't rent to students. The children of these immigrants moved to North Bethlehem to become gentrified, to get rid of the South Side stigma. So they rented to the new Latino immigrants. And these properties were not maintained by the non-resident landlord. They blamed Latinos for not keeping them. And for some reason, the city stopped inspecting these properties. And these properties then became run down. But they weren't the entire block. But then what the city did, they condemned the entire block, cleared it away, allowing for Lehigh's expansion. And that event began the slow death of Packer Avenue. Now, the final nail could be the closing of Packer Avenue. But also, the Planning Commission approved the expansion of Lehigh Business School. So Packer Avenue from Webster to Taylor will now be cleared. And the last remnant of an exquisite home is the old Cantelme home on Webster Street. So drive by and take a look at it. It's going to be gone. So if just thinking ahead, if one portion of Packer Avenue is closed, it would make sense to possibly ask for the other portion of Packer Avenue to be closed from Webster to Taylor. So what you have here is the birth and potential death of a historic street. So keep that in mind in terms of preservation of Bethlehem Southside history when the issue comes before you for a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Cox.
Bill Shire again, 1898 Avenue. First, a thank you to the mayor and the health department for the email about the coronavirus. One interesting thing in there, which I hadn't seen anywhere else, is that any hand sanitizer should have 60% alcohol. So I immediately got this out and checked. 62% ethyl alcohol. Thank goodness. I've been in D.C. and Wisconsin recently, so if anyone has already mentioned this, stop me. But it's the December issue of the Delta Airlines
in-flight magazine.
That did come up at the last meeting.
Okay, very good. it does, I won't be stopped, actually. It's 13 pages of text and pictures. A glowing picture. I didn't realize I was in such a happening place. It is one mistake, though. I don't know if this was pointed out. It says St. Luke's was founded in Allentown, which is not quite true. it certainly will attract more people to Bethlehem. And in accommodating these people, let's try to not lose too much of our quality of life, which is attracting people here in the first place. there was something else I wanted to say, but I forget, so I'll sit down.
Mr. Shire, I'm sorry, I was joking. It did not come up at the last meeting, so you're...
Well, I have it here if anyone wants to look at it.
All right. We'll take a look as long as you will sign it for us.
I should mention that there's a column by each of the three mayors, if that wasn't mentioned before.
Thank you. Anyone else like to make comment on the subject not being voted on this evening? Yeah, okay.
I promise I'm going to...
As long as you have a new topic for us.
Oh, definitely.
Thank
you. I've been going to city council meetings for well over 35 years. Not only in Bethlehem, but as my mother and my sister, rest her soul, maintained the house in Bethlehem, I lived in New York, Atlantic City, Woodbury, New Jersey, Philly, and I went to town council meetings, all those places about 35 years ago. Trying to get them to get lights, get cameras put into the traffic lights. And every one of them, even in Easton, I was this town council meetings, in Allentown, all over the place, trying to get them to put cameras in the lights. They said, do you realize what that would cost? I said, it would eliminate the problems of police officers having to chase the people. They get the tickets in the mail. They went halfway. Maybe another 10 years from now, they'll probably go the rest of the route. But hopefully in Bethel, maybe we could be trendsetters and do it. My suggestion was to put a pole to get the license of the car going by. So this way the tickets could be given. They never did that. Maybe we could be the first to make it happen. And then the police officers don't have to be doing that much work. They could spend the time doing what they used to do and eliminate the parking authority. We don't need them. We didn't need them back then. Why do we need them now? All they do, they boot vehicles. That makes it harder for people to park in legal spots. They keep those cars there for 2-3 weeks at a time that are booted, that have like 10 tickets. In Philly, they give them 24 hours to move that vehicle, or they tow them away. These cars, they leave them there. It's hard to find parking. Now, me making my living as an entertainer, I got to go to New York. I got to go to New Jersey to perform. On a Saturday night, I come home at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. There's no parking space about 10 blocks away. No way. Can't find a parking spot. So what do? I park in the lot. What happens? I get a ticket. But I could have parked in one of those spaces that the cars were booted. There's usually about 7 of them on the south side in my area, always booted for about 2 weeks at a time. Parking authority leaves them there. Come on, you created the monster. Take care of the situation. Get them straight. They need to get those vehicles out of there so we residents don't have to be, so we can have, they can be an authority on parking. If they're going to be an authority on parking, they need to get rid of the vehicles that are improperly, that are against the law. They're booted for a reason. Get them out of there. Leave the spaces open so we don't have to be having a hard time finding parking. Also, I got radiculopathy, lower extremities, two herniated discs in the lower lumbar region. I got two torn meniscuses, two torn patella problems. I can't be walking 20 blocks away from my house to get to put my guitar or something like that. Oh, sure, I can drop it off at my house and Now, the reason why I can't really, that's the other thing, back to the other situation. I can't stay in New York. I can't stay in New Jersey. I can't stay overnight nowhere because come Christmas Eve, I came home and the basement was all flooded. I don't know what to expect when I come back home. So the thing is, I can't be gone for long periods of time. So I got to come back. But there's no way to find a parking space. And the parking authority has this big cinder block blocking up my property for over 10 years. And the city says it's okay. It's blocking up my spot where I can go ahead and legally park, have a spot that I could be parking at that would be next to my house. You just don't do nothing about it. Nothing's being done about it. Nothing's ever being done. I got a little riled up before because 4 weeks at least I was here. I presented the situation.
We already heard these comments under the public hearing, which weren't really germane to that. We already heard these comments under the public hearing, which I allowed because I thought those comments would be these. So unless you have something new you'd like to share with us, if you could conclude your comments, please. We had a public hearing.
Yes.
On rentals, short-term rentals.
Right.
Your comments did not pertain to that. I allowed those comments that really
I would like to rent my space out, but I can't do that.
Understood. Do you have anything else?
Situation that nobody got back to me.
Do you have anything else new you'd like to share with us this evening?
Well, just that you get this situation together with the parking authority, so we can have spaces, more legal spaces to park on the south side of Bethlehem, or eliminate the parking authority. You don't need them. One or the other.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to make comment on any subject not being voted on this evening? Moving on to second public comment on the ordinances and resolutions to be considered this evening. We have one name signed up, John Gross.
Good evening. My name is John Gross.
You can pull the mic up there, thank you.
My name is John Gross. Most people call me Jack, but I'm here in regards to the proposed ordinance 1738 involving rental unit licensing. I'm here as a property and business owner in the city of Bethlehem. I'm also the current president of the Greater Lehigh Valley Realtors, as well as a board member for the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors. I attended the City Council Community Development Committee meeting held on February 20th, in which this proposed ordinance was discussed. At that time, there were handouts distributed like this to the attendees, which I have right here. I have made some statements at this public forum in regards to this ordinance and indicated that on its face, I and most of people I know are not opposed to the idea of having rental units inspected. We want safety inspections on a regular basis. I do own a number of single family and 2 to 4 unit properties in the city. I began investing in rental properties in the city I grew up in and work in some 20 years ago. In that time, me and my organization, I revitalized many single family and 2 to 4 unit properties that were purchased at share sales and other venues, many of which were previously vacant for considerable amounts of time and would have been on the list of blighted properties. These properties were then revitalized and rented, providing affordable housing with current average rents between $750 and $1,200, mostly to lower to moderate income tenants. I'm not a developer of huge fancy 50 to 150 unit mixed residential properties whose rents range in the $1,800 to $2,300 range. Nothing against these people, as there is obviously a need for what these developers offer, as their vacancy rates are quite low. My market for tenants has always been low to moderate income families and households. Allow me to address the fee structure that was articulated in this handout for the new proposed ordinance. If a property owner has a 3-unit property over every 3-year period or cycle, he or she will pay $300 for these 3 inspections, an additional $75 per unit per year for a licensing fee for a total of $975. This amounts to roughly a 200% increase inspection costs for this property owner on average as compared to what is taking place locally or currently. This also equates to a $325 per unit cost per cycle. Most of the properties that I and others like me own, and that we manage for others, fall within this category. Most of the properties that are managed by realtors throughout the city fall within this category, and many are rented to low to moderate income tenants. Here are the unit cost breakdown comparisons for the information provided by the city on February 20th on page 4. In making these calculations, I did not use the upper tier unit counts per property. I chose something close to what would be an average. So as an example, if I have a three-unit property, or anybody does, there's a $325 per unit expense per cycle per unit. If I have a seven-unit property, it's $165 per unit expense per cycle. If I have a 15-unit property, that individual or that owner pays $123 per unit expense. If I have a 35-unit property, it's $81, and if I have 100 units or more, it's $63 per unit expense for that individual owner. A small unit owner pays a business privilege tax. His or her property is treated like a business. In business, expenses are passed through to the consumer. As you can see, this is highly disproportionate. Those property owners who provide typically more affordable housing to lower and middle income households will be passing through a higher cost to their tenants. Under the present structure, everything is equal across the board. Under the proposal, certain property owners and their tenants are being penalized while developers and owners of larger complexes are actually getting what amounts to a cost decrease. The City of Allentown has a similar rental license ordinance at a cost of $75 per unit. The fee does not vary between number of units on a property. There is no inspection fee. It's fair across the board. Allentown completes inspections once every 5 years. The City of Easton has a similar rental licensing ordinance at a cost of $65 per unit. The fee does not vary between number of units in a property. There is no inspection fee as well. It's fair across the board. Easton completes inspections every 2 years. Not sure why, but Bethlehem has to be so much more expensive. How do these cities and many others throughout the state manage to systematically inspect all of their rental units within an agreed time period without inspection fees, but just reasonable licensing costs? It is our understanding, and we are looking into the specifics, state references, a municipality must remain revenue neutral, meaning funds generated from housing inspection fees can only be used within that department and cannot be moved to any municipal general fund. We were told on the 20th of February that this program will be revenue neutral. The city information that was made public does not break down the unit cost count per property and only offers a general estimate of 14,000 total rental units in the city. We do not have the percentage of those properties that fall within the most expensive 1 to 3 unit category, and how many fall into the other less expensive per unit categories. However, on the surface and having some experience in running a business, the cost of staff, initial equipment investment, and so forth, I honestly do not see how it could be mathematically possible for this new fee structure to not only generate above and beyond what is required, but to actually become a significant revenue source, especially when other nearby municipalities are operating similar programs at half the cost of what is being proposed. One of those municipalities is larger and one is smaller. I urge you not to pass this proposal forward as it is currently written. At the public meeting on the 20th, we were told that the realtors and developers were a part of the initial meeting with the consultant that was brought in, so we were informed. That meeting took place roughly 2 years ago and did not contain any details or drafts of a proposed licensing ordinance. There has been no additional outreach or communication with the Board of Realtors or property owner public discussions. Please understand that this is not all about costs either. There are still what many feel to be flaws or inconsistencies in how this will be implemented. I assure you, I and most providers of affordable housing have absolutely no issue with a systematic health and safety inspection of our units. I assure you that the Greater Lehigh Valley Realtors has no issue with the same. All we want is a fair and equitable solution and implementation, and we believe that those tenants of low to moderate income will be affected unfairly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gross. Is there anyone else who would like to make comment on any resolution or ordinance to be voted on this evening? Mr. Shire, you're on deck again.
Sheriff again, living on 1332 Budston Road. I would actually agree with Mr. Gross regarding the fee structures. I currently own multiple rental properties in Easton and Bethlehem. And if we want to keep this affordable housing, increasing the fee, I don't understand how that's going to benefit the property owner or the tenants living there, but only hurting both parties. It brings no benefits at all, but increased costs, which will be passed down to the consumer or the tenants in that matter. I'll be short and brief. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill Shar again, 1898 Avenue, with another trifecta. Just one comment on this rental housing ordinance. Page 1, under purpose, etc., the very last sentence. This ordinance shall be liberally construed and applied to promote its purposes and policies. That's a very vague statement, and I think it's an invitation for trouble. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to make comment? Yes.
Generation of real estate investments. I'm also a realtor of over 25 years. I agree with John and ask you please not to pass that ordinance this evening and to meet with a lot of the property owners. We own a lot of single family homes. We do provide a lot of housing for people on a needs basis. Our rents are all between $200, $400, and $600 less than what the average going rate is. Our tenants stay anywhere between 1 and 25, 30 years. We have people on fixed incomes. We have young adults trying to make it. We have single mothers with children that can't afford rent increases, and they will absorb these costs. So I do ask that you please do not pass this ordinance tonight and give us a chance to have a meeting and go over everything of all the needs of everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Milani. Is there anyone else who'd like to make a comment on any resolution or ordinance to be voted on this evening? Seeing none, we'll move on with our agenda. Is there any old business for members of council? Communications, communication 6C.
Memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Public Works Director, recommending a contract with Celebration Fireworks for July 4th fireworks. The contract covers July 4th, 2020 with the July 5th rain date. The cost is $33,280. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda, communication 6D.
A memorandum from Police Chief Mark DeLuzio requesting that council consider a resolution for the destruction of records from the police department listed on the exhibit attached to the resolution. The police chief has reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act and the records fall within categories where destruction is permitted.
The resolution will be placed on the March 17th agenda, communication 6E.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Brown Design Group for Rose Garden Improvement Design Work. The contract runs 9 months from the execution date. The cost is $14,455, and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda, communication 6F.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Lehigh Valley Musicians Association Local 45 to schedule and distribute funds for over 40 performances throughout the city in connection with the Music in the Park series. The contract runs from May 17, 2020 to December 19, 2020. The cost is $21,500 and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda, communication 6G.
A memorandum from Eric Evans, Business Administrator, with a proposed ordinance amending Article 121 of the City of Bethlehem Codified Ordinances, titled Finance. The ordinance would amend Section 121.12, titled Bond Issues, General Obligation Notes, and Lines of Credit, in connection with certain council financial oversight functions.
This will be referred to the Finance Committee, Communications 6H.
A memorandum from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, with an attached proposed resolution revising a previous H2O PA grant application related to a project to replace sanitary sewer main along Broadway, Broadhead Avenue, and West 3rd Street. The proposed revision would increase the grant request amount to $2,143,246.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda. Communication 6L.
A memorandum from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, recommending a contract with Huey Engineering for engineering services to develop an electrical subsystem master plan and maintenance and testing program for the electrical substations, power cabling, and switchgear at the wastewater treatment plant. The term of the contract runs from the notice to proceed until December 31st, 2020. The cost is $129,000 and there are no renewals.
Resolution 10G is on the agenda. Communication 6J.
A memorandum from Alicia Miller-Karner, Director of Community and Economic Development, recommending a substantial amendment to the 2019 CDBG Action Plan. In accordance with CDBG program regulations, the city is allowed to make substantial amendments to its annual action plan and budget in accordance with the city's citizen participation plan.
The resolution will be placed on the March 17th agenda. Communication 6K.
A memorandum from First Assistant City Solicitor Edmund J. Healy with a cover memorandum and attached red line showing amendments to a proposed ordinance to amend Article 1741 titled Short-Term Lodging Facilities. The substantive revisions were made in response to changes requested by the City Council Community Development Committee meeting on February 20th, 2020.
The bill will be placed on a future council agenda. A date has not yet been determined. Communication 6L.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. The permittee is Work to Live LLC, DBA Run Lehigh Valley, and the event is Brew to Brew Run. The covered locations are Nevin Place, adjacent to Sun and Courtyard, and Main Street from Sand Island to Broad Street. The agreement covers April 4th, 2020 for the main event with an April 11th rain date.
The resolution will be placed on the March 17th agenda. Communication 6M.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. The permittee is American Association of University Women, Bethlehem Branch. The event is their 2020 book fair. The agreement covers April 23rd, 2020 through April 27th, 2020 at the Earl Schaefer Ice Rink.
The resolution will be placed on the March 17th agenda. Communication 6N.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. The permittee is St. Luke's University Health Network, and the event is the 2020 Boutique at the Rink at the Earl Schaefer Ice Rink. Event dates are April 28, 2020 through June 8, 2020.
The resolution will be placed on the March 17th agenda. Reports. I have no reports this evening. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. President. A few reports here. First, I really want to echo the comments of Executive Armstrong that the City of Bethlehem has a great relationship with Lehigh County and Northampton County and the three sister cities. We coordinate a lot of different programs together, even pertaining to the virus. Our health department has reached out to both counties and the cities for their input, and so we're very fortunate to have a great working relationship with Executive Armstrong and the other governmental leaders. Administrative Order Number 7, I hereby appoint Judith Hinkle, 331 Carver Drive, Bethlehem, as an alternate to the Civil Service Board. This appointment is effective through January 2024.
The resolution to confirm is sponsored by Mr. Reynolds and Dr. Van Wert. Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. Administrative Order Number 8. I hereby appoint Tracy S. Kovich, 228 Aurora Street, Bethlehem, to the Redevelopment Authority Board. This appointment is to fill the unexpired term of Dennis Gennard, who resigned his position. The appointment is effective through March of 2023.
The resolution confirmed is sponsored by Mr. Reynolds and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Cologne.
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Negron.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Waldron.
Aye. Passes 7-0.
And let me give you an update on the coronavirus as of 5 p.m. this afternoon. And Council will be provided with a copy of the memo. This is from Kristen Wenrich, our health director, who has done an outstanding job meeting with the hospitals, the two hospitals, with the school district, the counties, the state government, and with the federal government. and she really should be commended that she put this together, so let me read it for the record. The Bethlehem Health Bureau has plans in place to respond to public health emergencies such as disease outbreaks. We have regular meetings with community partners and participate in emergency preparedness drills several times a year. To prevent the spread of the coronavirus or COVID-19, the Bethlehem Health Bureau is encouraging individuals to take the same precautions they would to prevent the flu or norovirus, washing hands, covering coughs and sneezes, cleaning surfaces, and staying home when sick. The Bethlehem Health Department is currently working with local partners to monitor the COVID-19 situation. The Health Bureau has had and will continue to have regular ongoing communications with the Department of Health, local healthcare networks, schools, colleges, universities, and emergency management. The Bethlehem Health Bureau is working with the Northeast Healthcare Council to provide situational updates to healthcare networks, first responders, and emergency management. Weekly conference calls are scheduled to ensure communication preparation. The Department of Health had a call on Monday with healthcare facilities and EMS departments. A separate call is scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday, with long-term care facilities to review guidance. Bethlehem Health Bureau is communicating with the Bethlehem School District as well as Lehigh University and Moravian College and providing updates and guidance as necessary. To date, no one, as of 5 o'clock this afternoon, in Bethlehem or Pennsylvania has been tested positive for COVID-19. Any individual who arrives in the United States from China is currently being quarantined and monitored for 14 days. The Health Bureau has been monitoring individuals returning from China over the last 6 weeks. A total of 7 individuals have been monitored. This guidance may change as countries with widespread disease are added. Coronavirus testing guidelines have recently been updated to include new geographical areas beyond China, including now Iran, Italy, Japan, and South Korea. Additionally, testing criteria now includes individuals with little exposure identified but presenting with severe respiratory illness without explanatory diagnosis. The Pennsylvania Bureau of Labs is now able to test. Previously, only the CDC could test for COVID-19. This should result in greater efficiencies. And the Health Bureau will continue to provide information on the city's website and social media networks. And we do have a meeting Friday at 9:30 with Wind Creek and Transit Bridge to discuss various situations. So that's my report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Other reports, Dr. Van Wert?
The Community Development Committee met on Thursday, February 20th, 2020 at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. The members of the committee referred the following two bills to full council for consideration. Proposed bill establishing Article 1738 titled Residential Rental Units, and proposed bill amending Article 1741 titled Short-Term Lodging Facilities.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan?
The Human Resources and Environment Committee met on February 25th, 2020, 6 p.m. in Town Hall. The committee reviewed a proposal bill that would establish a new codified ordinance article titled Wage Equality. A spirited discussion was had. The committee planned to hold a future meeting to discuss the bill along with potential amendments. I also encouraged all committee members to forward me any changes and suggestions and or amendments that they feel are needed to protect the women in Bethlehem, and the meeting date will be announced shortly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Mr. Klum?
Thank you, President Waldron. Public Safety Committee just got together earlier tonight at 5:30 here at Town Hall. We got an update from Police Chief DeLuzio regarding the enforcement of Article 744 titled Marijuana Possession.
Moving on to ordinances for final passage, Ordinance 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2020 General Fund Budget. Bill 2, 2020 is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? The clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Colon.
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Aye.
Mr. Groen.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Waldron.
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2020 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill 3, 2020 is sponsored by Mr. Reynolds and Mr. Colon.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Colon.
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Aye.
Mr. Groen.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Waldron.
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8C.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2020 capital budget for water utilities. Bill 4-2020 is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Colon.
Aye.
Mr. Cramsey Smith.
Aye.
Mr. Grohn.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Waldron.
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8D.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2020 capital budget for sewer utilities. Bill 5-2020 is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Mr. Colon.
Aye.
Mr. Ramsey Smith.
Aye.
Mr. Grohn.
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds.
Aye.
Mr. Waldron.
Aye. Passes 7-0. New ordinances. Ordinance 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, establishing Article 1738 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem relating to residential rental units. Bill 6-2020 is sponsored by Mr. Reynolds and Dr. Van Wert.
Discussion? Mr. Callahan.
Mr. Evans, is it revenue neutral? I mean, I guess that I'm thinking that the fees that we're going to raise here are going to help fund for new inspectors.
Yeah, everything to do is based on projections because obviously this is a new program. Our concerns from the administration side dating to maybe last summer and earlier working with the community development was to making sure it was at least that the revenues could cover the expenses, which are significant. This adds three new employees, three full-time employees, vehicles, computers, and all associated equipment and fringe costs as well on those. So every budget that I worked with CD was to make sure that it did that. In no way out is it, as was suggested, that it may be a use of cash in the general fund. That was not, as we put that budget together, that was never part or cause, because that rule is obviously, that law is in place, that these programs are built and designed to be revenue neutral, and the associated fees, which were broken down and developed by community development, were intended to do that. Could that be adjusted one way or the other in future? That may be the case. We may find out that even with the fees that are proposed and suggested, we still are now they're breaking even, but losing a lot of money. We don't know how many inspections will get done. That's part of the projections as well. A lot went into this, a lot of planning and timing, but at the end of the day, they're all projections. What we think we can get through, how many inspections we think we can do, given the staff that we're bringing on, time will tell as that is. But that's the intention, that this is to pay for itself only.
So how many inspections are we estimating that each inspector is going to be able to get done? New inspector?
I'm going to turn to, I believe, Amy.
Do you have the information?
Sure. Yeah, I was at a number of the meetings in the development of this, but there's a community development program. I attended part of, but not all of, the meeting that this was presented by. I know Amy Burkhart, the deputy director, was there presented to talk about how the fees were generated. And obviously some economies of scale are built in when the larger complexes, inspector gets on site, they can do a number in one period of time versus driving to one just to do one. It's much less efficient, but that's part of the thing that went into that. But I'll turn to Ms. Burkhart for that explanation.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I apologize. I'm trying to find that exact number of inspections. So currently, when we're looking at residential rental units in the City of Bethlehem, our inspectors are currently, in 2018 anyway, inspecting 1,900 units. In all, however, the four inspectors that we have do about 3,500 inspections, because they don't do just residential rental inspections on change of tenant. They additionally do sale inspections and inspecting of, the dormitories at Penn State, of the fraternities and sororities and regulated rentals. So there is a lot of housing inspection that we do on any given year. So we anticipate increasing the number of the inspections by about 2,000 a year. So about an additional 2,000, maybe a few more inspections of residential rentals specifically.
Yeah, I guess my question is, Mr. Burke? Gross, I'm sorry. His question about the amount of money that we were charging versus Easton and Allentown. So where is Easton on the scale for the inspections?
Quite frankly, I would have to. I have not reviewed Easton's inspection schedule, and I don't know what all they include in it. I haven't reviewed their budget in full regarding their rental inspection.
And Allentown also.
Correct.
I just don't. You know, I know when we look. You know, when we're looking at other rates, whether it's parking meter rates or fines and things like that, you know, we're always trying to get comparisons between the other cities. So my concern with this is that, and I'm not talking, I want inspections done, I want properties, you know, up to code, and I'm not talking about the big new developments. I think those people can afford these, you know, fees. What my concern is for the people, you know, like the that, you know, the neighbor that owns two or three properties, you know, single dwellings. And, you know, the mayor and I know our barber, who owns several properties, single dwellings. He was against it. I talked to probably about six or seven other associates that I know that own, not big housing units, but 20, you know, 15, 10. And they're telling me, and I'm just relaying what I've been told. And I think we were told that tonight also. But my fear is that these fees, we're passing them on to the owners, and they're going to be passing them on to the renters. And so I will be voting no on this tonight, because I think what we need to do is sit down and talk with the realtors and some of the property owners. I don't know, you know, from what we were told tonight, that they weren't included in that discussion. So what my concern is that I think rental rates already in the city are extremely high, and I think this is just going to be a tax that is going to be passed on to the renters, and it's only going to increase rental rates in the city of Bethlehem, which I feel are already extremely high, and I think it's going to have a great impact on the low and moderate income individuals and renters in the city of Bethlehem. So because of that, I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Is there any, Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah, I have a question for the administration. On page 8 of 15, where it's got the initial inspection fee of 1 to 3 units, and it's got the $100 per unit there, is that $100 to be paid every year, even if you don't have an inspection done?
No. So the inspection fees are only paid every 3 years for an inspection.
So you pay $100 every 3 years whenever your property is going to be on that schedule?
Correct.
Because I think that's important to point out there. And it's the same thing if you had 49 units, there would be one $400 flat fee every 3 years.
Correct.
So if you look at the 1 to 3 units and you put the, and if you say you have one unit or if you have 3 units and you're paying $100 every 3 years plus the $75 that you're already paying now, right? I think you pay the $75 every year, correct?
The $75 is an annual license.
So that's already in place. So if you look at the $100 per unit once every 3 years, you got 12 months in a year and you got 36 months over 3 years. And if you divide 100 by 36, you're looking at a little bit less than $3 a month, if over a three-year period.
Correct.
So if I actually have the opposite worry, that renters aren't going to know that 100 divided by 36 is a little less than $3, and people are going to say, I had to raise the rent because of new fees and inspections, when in actuality, to break even, you would probably need to raise your rent about $2.90 a month,
so
over three years to get your $100 back.
Yeah, for the inspections, it is $100 every 3 years. The licensing fee, you know, just as a point of clarification, we don't currently have a licensing fee in the city of Bethlehem, or we don't currently have a rental license, and we feel like that's very important to collect correct owner information about property managers, information about the properties themselves.
Because we don't currently have a list of all rental properties, correct?
We have a list of properties that we have in our system as rental properties,
uh-huh.
And certainly there's a lot of cleanup to that list that we have that we could endeavor to do. So if we take those fees and spread them out over 3 years, over a three-year period, one rental unit would be charged $325. So going back to your equivalent of what that translates per month, it's $9.03.
So it's so if you took $325.
Yes. And divide that by 36.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then you have the $75 every year.
Correct.
Plus the $100
every 3 years.
For every 3 years for the inspection. You get $325. And then you got $325 divided by 36. Mm-hmm. So then somebody to get their money back would have to raise the rent from $700 to $710 or $1,000 to $1,010.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I got that math right, because I wasn't sure whether or not it was $100 per year or if it was $100 every 3 years or not.
Yeah, we only charge for inspections when we do the inspection.
Uh-huh. Okay. And then the first reinspection, in case somebody comes out and there are problems or they're not up to code, then there's, I believe what I read here is that there's no charge to the first reinspection. But then the second reinspection, if the person would then be coming out a third time, correct?
Correct.
So it's $100 the first time, second time it's nothing, and then the third time, if they would have to come back out, it would be $75.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mulder.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Thank you. I just have to say that this is one of the biggest issues. I know when I was running for council and elected, it was a top priority for me, because I know many, many people in the city, including myself, who have been severely and continue to be adversely affected with their quality of life because of rentals in the city. And while I can certainly understand the realtors and the landlords' position, I think it's unfortunate, because it's just like the Airbnbs. We have a few, you know, we have bad apples with landlords and tenants who make it, you know, horrible for everybody. I'm glad Councilman Reynolds talked about the number crunching, because I think that, again, I'm hoping that the landlords will not try to pass this on to the renters, because we do have a housing affordability crisis in Bethlehem as well as the entire country, and I think it would be very shameful to say, okay, now we have to increase rent because we're going to have to pay $9 a month. Again, I can attest that we have a crisis, I think, in the city with rentals. I know for a fact, I know many, many people who are adversely affected by rentals, myself included. I could tell horror stories that people have been experiencing, and I really feel that this is important, and I really thank you for all the work, and I am going to support this strongly. Thank you.
Mr. Klum?
Thank you, President Walter. Just briefly, I'll be supporting this tonight also. I agree with bringing everything under the once every 3 years structure of maintaining the rental units and keeping up with what's going on, as opposed to the current program, which is for the landlords to report it. I personally, Mr. Simonson helped me out. I went through a right-to-know request, just like anybody else, and here come to find out, in a 7-unit building that I occupied for a number of years, there was never a certificate of occupancy for any of the units until a handful of years ago. I had to reach out to the city with my own complaints and then initiate the process there. And a lot of things came to light after the fact, but I think a program like this gets ahead of a lot of those things, so that we're not relying on the landlords, which most of whom do follow the protocols and the policies and everything like that, but this just kind of standardizes things a little bit more that I'm in agreement with. So I will be supporting this tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. I am, like some of my colleague mentioned, really concerned, because affordable housing, it is a problem. I'm glad that Councilman Reynolds clarified that the cost per unit that the landlord will have to raise perhaps will be something around $10 or so per month per unit. But I am concerned about the fact that we didn't even take a look at what Easton and Allentown are doing, and obviously it's very different. And I think that there's still an opportunity for us to take a look at what they're doing, and instead of making Bethlehem more expensive than already is, or making it harder for landlords that already is. I think we really this is a very important issue among our community. We keep on building luxury apartments for somebody to come, and we are falling behind in the people in the community that cannot afford, you know, people that are working in a warehouse for $15 an hour cannot afford what we have in our community right now. I'm really concerned about that. I think, I know it's very important to do the inspection because that will secure the safety of the housing stock. But I think that we really need to take a look. We've done that, like Councilwoman Callahan mentioned, we've done that before, before making decisions on fees, looking at Easton, Allentown, and other municipalities. And I'm a little surprised that that was not done. And I wish we can take a closer look at it because this is just a precious topic for our community. We cannot keep on supporting luxury apartments and not taking care of the affordable housing. I'm really concerned about that. So I will not be voting in favor of this, and I'm hoping that something could be done, taking a look at Easton and Allentown, so that it is more, looking more like what's happening in the cities around us. Thank you.
Dr. Van Roy.
Thank you. One of the things I wanted to clarify about this whole ordinance from my perspective is I think what we're looking at is control. And when it comes to our housing, I think, especially in our lower tier housing, I think control is an important thing. The licensing fee is there because, from what I understand right now, we don't have that connection between where a house is and who actually owns it. The licensing fee will now allow us to connect those two things together, which allows us to figure out who is supposed to be fixing up that code violation, who is supposed to be reporting back and paying the inspection fee. So I feel that this licensing fee is really important. I also think that a three-year inspection fee at $100 is not an egregious amount of money. I don't think it's going to majorly impact the fees that are done. And I understand that there is some concern over how other cities are doing it. I think the question you have to ask is how well are they doing it? And I think if we are going to ask for any type of data like that, it's really is how well are they doing it? I would argue that we were not doing it well before and our fees were smaller. So the additional fees and the additional program isn't necessarily something that is just going to be costs that are passed down. It's actually supposed to raise the quality of the housing stock in general. I did have one question during the Community Development Committee meeting, and it goes back to that idea of control, and there was no answer at the time. I just wasn't sure if you all were able to come up with the answer, which is, if somebody owes outstanding real estate taxes to the city, if it's an LLC and one member of that person does, can you deny the license to them for unpaid taxes on a different building?
That is not currently built into this ordinance. That when we, so, and the ordinance that we have that does allow us to deny that is a permit-based ordinance. So like when we're denying people permits based off of unpaid taxes. So in this particular instance, because it's an inspection mm-hmm. and a license and an inspection, it's not currently built into the denial ordinance.
Do we do that? So this would be like an occupancy permit?
So I'll let Mike speak to that a little bit if he wants to. Like after an inspection, there is an occupancy permit that's associated with inspections that say that your house is clear. So
yeah, that's the Act 90 you're talking mm-hmm. about, and the Act 90 doesn't allow us to prevent life safety inspections or the sort of the licensing. It allows us to prevent like further construction and items along those lines, so we can prevent developers from not pulling permits or not allowing them to move forward with their project if they owe a significant amount of taxes from another property or something like that. But when it comes to life safety and items like that, Act 90 doesn't allow us to prevent any sort of inspections or anything along those lines.
Okay. Well, that's not ideal, but that's what we have right now. Anyways, I do think that this is an important piece of legislation to secure the quality of our housing stock, and I'll be supporting it tonight.
Mr. Callahan?
I think it's, I agree with Mr. Reynolds, the amount that is going to be impacted on the renter on a per month basis is very low, but I've been around a lot of rental housing, and I've been around a lot of rental units. And I'm not saying just our inspectors are very thorough. All city inspectors in Allentown East are all very thorough. And I think what you find out is I've never known any units not to have any violations or whatever. A lot of times what happens is maybe while the people are living in a home that, you know, a kid punched a hole in the wall or something broke. And we want that fixed. But with that, whether it's an electrical or plumbing problem, a curbing issue, or sidewalk issue, an issue in the patios, their safety issues, they need to be fixed. I want them fixed. But that cost is in the thousands. I've had, and I'm nowhere near what most renters are. I have two rental properties. And every time a new renter goes in there, I get it inspected, and I want it inspected, I want it safe, but there's always additional charges, sometimes in the thousands of dollars. I don't think I've ever had one renter move out and another renter move in where there wasn't a minimum of $900 to $1,000 in a fee. And that gets passed on to the renter, and that's the money that's substantial. It's not the fee or the fine. It's the remedying of that, it's a good thing. I agree with Dr. Van Wert. It's going to increase our housing stock, which is a good thing. But my problem with that is when you increase the housing stock, people put in new kitchens, new bathrooms, new showers, new flooring. That there's a real cost to that that's substantial. And that does get passed on to the renter. There's no doubt about it. You can talk to any realtor or anybody who owns rental properties. They're not eating that cost. And that is one of the major reasons why affordable housing in the city of Bethlehem is very limited. So.
Mr. Reynolds?
So then just the logical conclusion to that is if we're not going to do inspections, there are things that are not going to be up to code, that are not fixed, and people are going to be living in those particular houses. So I understand that concern from people, but the conclusion to that then is that we have people that would be living in houses that would be substandard unless there are potential changes to the building codes that would lower the burden then for what is safe, quality housing for people to live in. Which I agree, it's a challenge. And I think part of the challenge is that, and what we have seen in the past, is that because we currently have a reactive system, and we all been to block watch meetings where you hear there's a problem property and the city goes out and it turns out that they've changed tenants 3, 4, or 5 times. And since it was on the property owner to contact the city of Bethlehem and they didn't do that, then all that happened was every time it switched, probably because the landlords, which is not the majority of them, but it is some of them, is they didn't want to call, because if they called and let the city know and the inspectors went out there, there would be damages that would need to be fixed. So I think that the balancing act there is to be proactive about the inspections, so it's not that particular situation. But I don't know what the solution is then, as far as how expensive it is to get a house up to code, when the alternative is people, and generally low and moderate income people, having to live in that substandard housing. I think that's the genesis here of what the city's looking at as far as changing why and how we're going to do those inspections. Thank you, Mr. Walter.
Thank you. Amy, there's been a bit of talk about our neighboring cities and how they do inspection, what those fee costs are. Would you be able to figure that out before second reading?
Certainly we could. I mean, because the inspection fees that we have reflected in here are the ones that we currently have. Like, we have we're charging $100 per inspection now. I think the one thing that we would just compare is what other people utilize for licensing fees. And I recently saw an article on Fountain Hill charging a similar amount as well, and I believe Mr. Gross just indicated that both Allentown and Easton additionally charge $60 and $75 respectively. Okay. So, but yes, we can certainly sort of aggregate that information and put it all in one sheet.
Yeah, and if you want to include more than Allentown and Easton, like some of the smaller municipalities, I would leave that to you. But also, not just the numbers, but what they're getting for that.
Oh, because sure.
You're not comparing
absolutely
apples and oranges necessarily.
Yeah, just add that.
No, unfortunately not, sir. There also has been a bit said about the communication and outreach to realtors and folks who have vested interest in this. This might be an opportunity to reach back around and have some of those conversations, as you have a very willing participant in the room with you this evening, to at least make initial contact to have some of those conversations. If in fact this does pass first reading, there is some time before second reading, so that way we can have a little more information and everybody could be more on the same page, as it feels like there might be a little misinformation floating around, to at least understand where the other perspective is, whether you agree with it or not. I find that to be helpful, typically. And then, if you are able to give us more information, that might put us in a position where we might be able to make any adjustments that council might see fit in order to help get some of those goals in order to what the ordinance is intended to do. Or obviously a lot of time and effort has been put into this by the administration, and you're confident in it as it stands, it may be enough to move forward as is. The other question that I can't help but ask was brought up by our very own Mr. Shire here in the first paragraph, A, the last sentence, the ordinance shall be liberally constructed and applied to promote its purposes and policies, and I might have to turn to Mr. Healy for this, but that does seem broad, and I don't remember seeing that in other ordinances, and it does basically seem like it gives a pretty blank check to the city to do as they want. If you would please step up to the microphone, let us know why that exists and what its intention is. And again, that was on the first page, paragraph A, the last sentence.
Sure. Excuse me. The main concept, as I recollect, was to promote the minimum safety standard that was desired throughout the city, especially for the low and middle income residents that would be subject to the inspections. And the purpose, declaration of policies and findings section is set forth right on the first page. And I believe this breathes some meaning into the policy that is to be liberally interpreted. So if the council would take a moment to go through that, you'll find that the purpose of the policy is, the purpose of this article and the policy of the city is in order to protect and promote the public health, safety, and welfare of its citizens, to establish rights and obligations of owners and occupants, and to encourage owners and occupants to maintain and improve the quality of rental housing within the community. That's the main purpose. The secondary purpose is to make sure the property owners and managers and occupants, pardon me, are sharing responsibilities to obey the various codes adopted by the city to promote public health, safety, and welfare interests. As a means to those ends, this article is intended to provide for a system of inspections, issuance and renewal of occupancy licenses, and in setting penalties and policies. So the concept really is to make sure those people who haven't had the benefit of being able to perhaps buy the best desirable housing or rental properties to abide in, they will have this assured minimum quality standard for the properties within which they are abiding, either by choice or because of lack of choice elsewhere. That'll be the purposes for which this is to be liberally promoted and interpreted. I don't know that really opens the door to any sort of wild interpretations or aggressive over enforcement or policing by any of the inspectors. I think that fits well with a very narrow goal, and the inspectors are applying very specific provisions of the codes of the city. I think it narrowly addresses that in the ordinance the way it's written.
What? I understand your perspective that last sentence applies to the previous paragraph and standalone.
you look at that sentence and it looks odd. Shall be liberally construed and applied. Well, what does that mean? And I think your answer is read above paragraph to understand that.
Basically, yes.
Okay. I would look to Mr. Spirk if he has any thoughts on that.
I just might add, oftentimes the reason you include a purpose paragraph in an ordinance is for some court later on that's trying to interpret some language in here that might be perceived as vague and might be challenged sometime. And so you often include purpose language to try to send a message to the court that as you're trying to construe what something means on page 7 or page 10, bear in mind what we were trying to get at, and sort of like we encourage the court to understand what the legislature meant here and to try to interpret it in a way that's consistent with the goals that we've stated. That's just sort of generically why you would include purpose language and why you might include shall be liberally construed. When I look at that, I often think you're trying to say that to the court later in the event of a challenge. If this is what we tried to get at, please try to interpret it consistently. I don't know if that's why this is here, but I'm just speaking sort of generically that you'll see that kind of language sometime in legislation or ordinances.
Okay. It's not my intention to do anything about that right now, but I don't know. Maybe we can continue a conversation before second reading about that or its necessity, or that's something that you and Mr. Spirk can connect on. Because it looks odd, and I definitely would not have brought it up if not for Mr. Shire, so thank you for that. I have no other comments on this. I think the fee structure is very reasonable. I think the intent is clear to help protect the renters within the city, and I can understand that that nominal fee may be passed on to renters. I would hope that the city does well to educate not only the property owners about this new schedule and the fee structure, but as well do a fair effort to educate the renters. As Mr. Reynolds talked about, I would hope that a renter isn't taken advantage of to the point to say, we have to raise your rent $50 a month to cover this new inspection fee cost, when really a $10 increase would be appropriate to cover that new fee structure. So I will be supporting this evening. However, I am open to other conversations within council or the administration before second reading in any efforts to make this more to the point of what its intention is. Mr. Callahan?
Just a quick comment. I'm not playing gotcha. If you don't know it, you know, just ask. But this is an example of, I'm all for a home being safe in all aspects. But I'll give you an example, like a quick one. And I don't know what the minimum width is, but they, I don't know if it was the city or whatever, passed a new ordinance that the railing between going down steps or whatever had to be an additional railing added. You know what I mean?
A guard.
Yeah,
it's called a guard. Yeah.
Right. Right. So that's the type of thing that I'm talking about. Where if a child is living there, totally understandable. But if like in the circumstance that I'm talking about, this is like one of those minor issues where the inspector, he has to go in by law and write that up. And most people who own rental property, me, right, I don't run, I'm not handy. So I have to hire someone. So that's my whole point in bringing up this, you know, the additional inspections is when you have someone in there, as Ms. Milani said, you know, tonight, some of these people are renting 4, 5, 6 years constantly, and to have someone go in there every 3 years and re-inspect it, it's, you know, when I know, when you inspect it, there's usually things and violations and new codes that have to be upgraded, and that's the real cost in that is going to be passed on to the renter. It's not the fee structure, which, you know, I'm all for the housing stock being upgraded and being up to code. It's just that it's those minor things where if there's a baby there, a young kid, I totally understand that, you know, that part of the code. But when it's two adults living there and, you know, the inspector goes in there, which he has to do, you know,
And we're not blind to that fact,
right,
either. Because, I mean, like you even said, like Ms. Milani said earlier, some of these houses haven't been in, haven't had an inspector through them in years, you know, so they'd be outside that 3 years regardless. So, I mean, we're going to have to work, and we're going to have to instruct our inspectors and teach our inspectors that, you know, a certain issue in a house, like a regulated rental or a student rental, where there may be some chipping paint or something along those lines that we're going to write up in our report, we may extend the time out on something like this, because it's just not reasonable if somebody had a tenant for 10 years or 15 years, and we go in and, you know, we find a small item, we're not going to hold your hand to the fire, like something that's turning over every 6 months or 9 months, right, or 12 months. So we're going to have to, it's going to be in a learning process for the inspectors too, because it's going to be, they're going to be seeing a lot more properties that they haven't seen in the past. So, but we're going to try and educate the landlords, the property owners, everybody at the same time as we go.
Do you in your experiences though, have you, like, if you go into a property, hasn't been inspected in 3 or 4 years, generally there's minor code violations that have to be fixed.
Typically what we're finding, if we haven't been in a house in an extended period of time like that, so typically what we find is usually there's an issue with the smoke detectors or something like that. They either have the batteries out or they just took them down over time like that. And some of the other things we might find are some of the newer things that people aren't familiar with, and it's just the safety measures, like an anti-tilt bracket on a stove and stuff like that. All kind of minor things. We really don't find, if the heating, typically if there's no heat or the water isn't working or something like that, we find out far ahead of our inspection because the tenant will usually call us.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, so typically the major components of the house are working, so it's really just the life safety features that we kind of find, right, when we go into those older houses.
Thank you.
Yep.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Nay.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Nay.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 5-2. Resolutions? Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute use permit agreements and such other agreements and documents as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor with the following named youth athletic organizations for various events: Bethlehem Saints, Bethlehem Stars, Bethlehem Steelers Athletic Association, Lehigh Sports Association, North Central Little League, Northdale Athletic Association, Northeast Bethlehem Raiders, Northeast Athletic Association of Bethlehem, Southside Little League. The resolutions are the resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute use permit agreements and such other agreements as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor with the Star Bethlehem Festival, Inc. for the Fealty Fest. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Celebration Fireworks for the July 4th celebration. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Grohn?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Brown Design Group for services related to planned rose garden improvements. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Grohn and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10E.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Lehigh Valley Musicians Association Local 45 for services related to the Music in the Park series. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10F.
Be it resolved that the City of Bethlehem of Lehigh, Northampton Counties hereby requests an H2OPA grant of $2,143,246 from the Commonwealth Financing Authority to be used for replacement of sanitary sewer main located in Broadway, Broadhead Avenue, and West 3rd Street in the City of Bethlehem. Be it further resolved that the applicants do hereby designate Robert J. Dantes, Mayor, Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources, and George Yasso, City Controller, as the officials to execute all documents and agreements between the City of Bethlehem and the Commonwealth Financing Authority to facilitate and assist in obtaining the requested grant. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Grown and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. DeGrone?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Huey Engineering, Inc. for services related to the Wastewater Treatment Plant Electrical Systems Master Plan and Maintenance and Testing Program Development. The resolution is sponsored by Mr. Grown and Mr. Reynolds.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Grown?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Accept the motion to second to consider resolutions 10H through 10J as a group.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Cologne, second by Ms. Negron.
It's okay.
If the clerk would please call the roll on the motion.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Grown?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Discussion on the resolutions. If the clerk would please read the resolutions and call the roll.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of Pennsylvania Legislature and Bethlehem Ordinance are hereby granted for 702 East 4th Street to replace existing windows at the front facade due to fire damage, 127 129 East 3rd Street to retain existing light fixtures that were previously installed, 215 East Morton Street to install windows, doors, and handrail. The resolutions are sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Reynolds.
Please call the roll.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Grown?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Mr. Walter?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New business, Ms. Cramsey Smith?
There will be a Public Works Committee meeting on Tuesday, April 14, 2020 at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. The subject will be proposed transfers of city-owned real estate.
Thank you. Is there any other new business for members of council? This meeting is adjourned.